Live from Burbank, California, take the I-5 south, close your eyes and think of England. It's the Mark Maron Show. And now, he's a cookie full of poison, Mark Maron.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Geniuses, philosopher, kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor, lurking conservatives, Clippers fans, what's going on? I'm here to tell you that I am a child inside. That's what I am. Right now, I am screaming, why can't I have it exactly the way I want it at all times? Why can't I? Wouldn't that be a great world? Dude, Jim, what's happening? Well, Patton Oswalt out, down for the count. Patton Oswalt, comedian Patton Oswalt, was supposed to be on the show tonight. I email him. He's like, oh, I got to get up early because I'm really successful. I can't be on tonight. Maybe I'll come on next week sometime. We went back and forth. The poor guy felt guilty for leaving me hanging. But you know what? I just basically said, look, I don't need you. Yeah, I don't need you. We'll have you on next time. No big deal.
I think if anything,
Jim and I have got it covered. I said
this night will prove that you don't need him.
Oh, come on! I love the little Patton. I had an intro for him and everything. I told him I loved him, and I said, you come on any time, and we'll sell your products, and we will have conversations, and we'll be funny together. But tonight, instead, we got my dear friend. Instead, he was in addition to my friend. Patton Oswalt was in addition to my buddy Jack Boulware, who is. He is a world traveler.
That's just too much fun.
He goes to the corners of the earth to find the exciting, marginal, interesting stories about any number of things. We're going to have him in here to talk, and that's going to be very cool. Do you understand? Cool. I'm using the word cool.
Don't talk to me about cool. I know what cool is.
Sure. Let's have a listen from the other night, Saturday night. Cool Jim Earl in the basement of Steinway's Piano Store on Saturday night.
Now, Joseph Cotton for Starkist Tuna. Well, Charlie never really knew the real meaning of love. All he wanted was just to have everyone love him. Love me, I'm Charlie Tuna. Say, you wouldn't happen to have a cigar on you, would you? Pretty little nurses here have a funny idea. They're going to keep me alive.
Silence.
What's that, Rosebud? Yeah, that was Marion Davies Wabungi.
Thud.
Yeah, see, now...
you can see me 20 years later in a love boat.
We should make it clear to people that there was an audience.
My career really take a nosedive, and it's Joseph Cotton for Starkist Tuna.
Now,
God, I've gone through this crap faster than I ever have before in my entire life.
There's the laugh. You know what people love? They love to see comics squirm, especially other comics, because I think you heard me laughing there at the end.
They saw me squirm.
There's nothing better than that moment where you realize, hey, that's my buddy up there, and he's in trouble.
Let's see
how he deals with it.
I know, man.
It's called
crisis
management. It's hilarious with comics. I think that's how you know that things are bad on stage, when you hear the comics in back going, ah, ha, ha. What are you going to do now? Where are you going to go with that one? You can't call a woman in the front row that and expect to come back from it. How many times have you been there, huh? How many times?
Enough to know better. Well, I know what I did. I know what happened. And I'm not proud of it.
Sorry, I was just doing some sound effects, some John Tesh kind of thing going. You know, he's got a radio show that everybody seems to love. Isn't that amazing?
John Tesh?
Who the hell listens to that?
I don't know.
Why the hell would people do that?
Why the hell would you bring that up?
Because I read an article about it today. It's in my head. I loaded my head up before I got here. I loaded it up with stuff. I got stuff for you, too, Jim. It seems that our little discussion about Christians the other day.
Bring it on. I'm not afraid.
No, I'm not.
I'm not afraid of Jesus.
I'm going to savor it. I'm not going to jump right into it. We're not going to jump right into the religious facts right now, to
Bring
the religious
it on, Jesus.
Ideas. The one thing I do want to put out there before we get into this, you know what? Before I do that, why don't I address what I've posted on our blog, markmaron.com, MarcMaron. Did I tell you Jack Boulware is going to be here?
Oh, man.
Sitting right outside, pocket full of cigars he's got, to give me some, because that's something me and Jack do. We sit around and smoke cigars. But me, I've been off the cigars for 3 days, hence the fact that I have peanut butter in my beard. All right? I cannot stop eating. It's ridiculous. I forgot what it's like to be addicted to something, man. As soon as you pull out one plug, it's time to put in another. For God's sakes, I'm bleeding all over the place. I am a child inside. I need. Do you understand? I had dinner. Right?
Yeah.
Now, let me just explain one thing about me and my relationship with cigars. I am not affected with it. I'm not posturing. I don't smoke Cubans. I don't want to spend a lot of money. I smoked cigarettes since I was 14. I quit 5 years ago. Great day. Got off him. Kicked a habit. Kicked a lot of habits. Okay? So when I'm doing the morning show in New York and I had no life whatsoever, nothing going on, I'd get up at 3:30 in the morning, go do the show, and then walk like I had been in a very long pillow fight for the rest of the day. Just completely exhausted, incapable of almost anything. And I would go home and I would smoke a stinky little punch cigar, and that's how I would reward myself. So, of course, in a matter of months, that became 3 to 4 to 5 cigars a day, which is tough. That's a job to smoke that many cigars. And it was not because I'm affected. It was because I want the nicotine and my body just started feeding on it. I just told my friend Jack, you know, it's time to stop smoking cigars when your cats smell like cigars. When you can overwhelm the smell of cat pee and catness on a cat with cigars, then it's time to quit. But now that I've taken that away and I'm chewing a lot of nicotine gum, look, you see the veins in my head? Nicotine gum. I ate dinner tonight, and I'm sitting there, and I'm like, hey, I could do a little research for the show so I don't end up talking about cigars and peanut butter on the air. But no, I went to a jar of peanut butter and just got crackers and started almost like, how many calories can I get into my dumb face, you know, before I get out of the door? I must have ate half a thing of peanut butter. Is that ridiculous? It was joyous while I'm at it, but why can't I apply the same damn principles I apply to crack, cocaine, booze, to anything else? Just say, like, hey, you know what, Mark? You know, whenever it is that you choose to stop sticking peanut butter in your face, you're just going to feel like an ass. And there's no, whatever you're feeling now is going to go away. And as soon as you stop, this is topical political stuff.
I know it is, Mark. You're just a walking brainstem. That's what you're, you know, reacting to stuff automatically. You have no control over your bodily functions or anything.
Sorry. I'm trying to do a thing underneath. I'd say
go back to the cigars because I can really start smelling the cats again.
Oh, come on, man. Jack Bulwer is going to be here in a minute. We're going to talk about health insurance. We're going to talk about Jesus. We're going to talk about the fact that the House, the Republican House, has just stifled the Democrats' ability to they put caps on the money, amount of money people can donate to organizations, to 527s, organizations like Move On, organizations that can actually fund something. They're just kind of figured, now that they've realigned the entire lobbying business in D.C. to be all Republican money, they're trying to make it completely impossible for Democrats to do anything. Maybe we'll get into that. Oliver Stone defending celebrities who want to talk. And I don't mind Oliver Stone, but I got a personal story about this, that people who say that celebrities shouldn't be allowed to talk about politics, they can shut their stupid holes. Let me tell you something. Celebrities... Not the celebrities, people who say that. I mean, I had this discussion.
I know.
I know
who you're talking
about.
Yeah,
I don't want to get into it, but it was with another comic. I had discussion.
Who?
This guy, Mitch Fatel.
Never heard of him.
I call him Baby Man. He's one of those guys that, you know, there's a theme of comics. And I'm not taking anything against comics. You make your choices. And either you choose to be some amplification of yourself, some caricature of who you are, or you go with the shtick. You know, he's one of those guys. He does sort of a slightly retarded character, you know, the cute retarded guy. He's funny. He's on the Tonight Show. He's pretty funny.
Okay.
Isn't that horrible that I say something like that and then I try to erase it? I put him down by saying, but I like him, man. He's a funny guy. It's just he does giant baby retarded guy. But I had a little argument with him. We'll be back with Jack Bulwer and important talk. And I'll tell you what's going on with Danny Goldberg and with this show next week. Yeah. Hang out.
Live from Burbank, California, home to Paul Bunyan and his Blue Ox. It's the Mark Maron Show. And out, he makes a great soup. Mark Maron.
Yes. Thank you, Jim. Geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes. Progressive utopians with no sense of humor. This is the second time I've done this. But you know what? Some people are just tuning in because they're like, hey, I know the show starts at 10, but maybe we should just tune in at 11. L.A. time. 6 past the hour. The blog is cooking, man. They're giddy, too. Everyone is full of the laughter.
Oh, man. I'll bet, huh?
How much time can I look at this blog? Yeah, I got a producer's already going, I'm going to have to turn that off. All right. Bill Kohler. I haven't given him a nickname yet, our new producer, Bill Kohler. I was going to go with Sleepy Bill. That's not bad, right? Because it's like Sleepy John Estes, and also I think it's a testament to your blues man stature. Sweepy Bill Kohler. No?
Really?
Maybe not. I mean, I can come up with something more catchy. Usually they just pop out at me, but not today. Hey, look, I don't want to ramble on. I'm going to introduce Jack Boulware here in a second. We're going to read some emails in a second. I know that some of you are like, Goldberg, not the wrestler, the guy who wrestled Air America Radio. I'm not going to... Look, I don't know what's going on. I just saw the news, the same you saw the news. He's moving, he's shifting, he's being put out to pasture here in California. I don't know what's going on. I don't know what it means for anything. I do know this about you people who are enjoying the Mark Maron Show. We are going to be doing it out of a studio next week. That means, I hate to break it to you, we're going to be taping it during the day, and it will be running here at night. For those of you who are podcasting, last night, that was an explainable accident. It won't happen again. I'm not going to tell you whose fault it was because it's unclear, but we've traced the problem down, and it won't happen again. For those of you who are just listening, when we do it in the studio, here are the benefits, my friends. We're going to have more production values. We're going to have more time to work on stuff in the studio. We're going to have more produced comedy bits. We're going to have more guests in the way of guests that can come on, like, during the day. People from the West Coast, people from the East Coast, people from D.C. who can tape during the day. There's a lot of benefits. The only real loss is initially we are not going to be going live at night. That's the only real loss, but everything else is a plus. Consistent two-hour show, more guests, more comedy. Jim and I will be sitting in different chairs. That's this right. Chair, why the hell do they make these office chairs like that? I have to assume that people who work in offices have to deal with these chairs all the time, the kinds with the four levers on them, and every time I push it, I end up like almost on the ground or flip backwards, and I go through this every time. Isn't work in a cubicle hard enough that you don't have to deal with this kind of crap with a chair that's working against you? And I think they're broken every time, but they're not. They don't come with an instruction. You know what? I'm done with it. A lot happened in the world today, and we want to make sure you're caught up on current events before you go to bed. So here's tonight's edition of Mark Maron's Short Order News. Why can't I get mad about important things? A deputy press secretary for the Department of Homeland Security is in a Maryland jail today, awaiting extradition to Florida on child pornography charges. Police said it was difficult to determine which calls were obscene or work-related, since all of his calls ended with the phrase, "This is our little secret." I can put that in quotes. Quote, "This is our little secret." End quote. New medical data shows American children and adult men are getting fatter while women are remaining steady. In response, male doctors from around the country are asking the same question. Does this data make my ass look big? Does it make my ass? Can you just look at my ass? Is it bigger? To keep the weight off, doctors recommend that men and children start looking at more fashion magazines, think of themselves as fat, and lower their self-esteem. I'm there. I'm already there. A man in Britain was hauled off a plane by London police on terrorism fears after he played songs by The Clash and Led Zeppelin in a taxi. As he was being led off for questioning, the man could be heard pleading, "Does anybody remember laughter?" He's pleading that, Jack. Come on, give it up. The man was later released, but was still charged. Wait, let me read it all over again. The man was later released, but was still charged for attempting to rock. Come on, dude, Zeppelin! And that's Mark Maron's Short Order News. I'm all hopped up on cookies. I'm not going to crumple this up because we're going to do another version of them. You like that, Bill? Thinking ahead. Planning ahead.
Danny Goldberg can't write jokes like that.
Oh, he certainly can't understand them. Here we go. Our guest has been... Oh, man, you're going to get us in nothing but trouble.
Well, I didn't say anything.
They're going to make us do the show in China.
I think it's great that guy gets... it's great the guy gets $800,000.
You have to do the show in Bangkok. They're going to outsource this show entirely. They're going to get a...
You know what?
They're
we
gonna,
still get better publicity there than we do here.
They're going to get two Hindus whose names are roughly like ours to do our job for us. How do you like that?
Hey, man, I'd love to hear that.
And then we could do the show from there. We could appear as guests on our outsourced Indian show, and maybe Lou Dobbs would do a segment on us.
God.
And then we could get on the Lou Dobbs show like Randy does, only from around the other side, man, as victims, yet people who embrace outsourcing at the same time. Man, I'm screwing my own head right now, dude. I don't even know where I am anymore.
Man, Lou Dobbs is pissed at everything.
Dude, Lou Dobbs is like, "Hi, I'm Lou Dobbs. There's a Mexican under the table right now that is here illegally, and I don't know what he's doing under my table."
He's being outsourced by the Italian who's usually under the table.
People, I found a Mexican in my underwear drawer this morning. They're all over the place. Lou Dobbs. Our guest has been a close friend of mine.
And now Jack Bowar.
For many years. What, Don? You know,
that was a great transition, by the way.
I'm a radio professional. I've been at this game for 2 years, buddy. So don't forget that. I've been in this game for 2 years, my friends.
Not as long as Danny Goldberg.
Dude, you're hanging yourself here, you know, because he's gonna.
He's a great man. He's done more than anybody possibly could have done with the amount of talent he was given. That's all I gotta say.
He's gonna fire us twice. Come on, dude. Here we go. Our guest has been a close friend of mine for many years. He was the publisher of the now defunct seminal freak show Out There magazine, The Nose. He spent time with Satan. He's hung with the inventor of the window pane delivery system for LSD. He's chased wild pigs through the hills of Northern California, my friends. He has pursued and caught the elusive wahoo fish off the coast of New Orleans. Jack Bowler has traveled the far reaches of the world, chasing down the most marginal travel stories available. His work has appeared in Playboy, New York Times Magazine, Wired, Maxim, and Salon.com. He's here now. Thank you for coming, Jack. What a build-up, man. What an intro. I crafted that myself.
Man, that was great. Thanks so much.
Thanks for being with us. We'll be right back with the rest of the show.
Is that it? Am I done?
Yeah,
God,
thanks
that was
for
great.
Coming. It's good to see
you. Did you list the website? Okay, quick.
Yeah, the website's there. I figured why talk? Let them go to the website. You just let them know that you're here. We put a picture on the blog and people
it's
validated.
It was worth the flight down, definitely.
You did fly down. You're doing something odd. You're going to interview a 90-year-old guy. He still does. What is that?
I'm going to go interview George Barris tomorrow morning.
Yeah.
The father of the custom car kind of culture. He's about 80 years old. All of his contemporaries are dead. Von Dutch and Big Daddy Roth. And George is still doing it.
Yeah.
He's about 80-some years old. He's still cutting up cars and making cars for movies and TV shows. And
I bet you his lungs are now just, you know, the color of his car paint. I imagine.
Yeah, he just wears a mask the whole time and sits in a bed.
And they roll him around. Keep me moving.
No, I actually interviewed him before for a short story for Wired magazine, and he was a great guy. He was very funny. You know, everybody in California knows him already, but you know, the rest of the country still, you know, they don't really know who that guy is. You know, he's been customizing cars since the 40s.
I once asked a person in my audience. I said, "Do you even know whose name you have on your hat?" Ass. It was Von Dutch. He's like, "No." They don't know. They just like
no
the way
idea.
The name looks.
They have no idea that guy, you know, was...
Invented pinstriping just
invented
about
pinstriping. He was a total racist. He hated black people. He lived in a trailer. He had a very weird history, you know. And then his daughters sold the licensing rights, and then the stores opened, and now it's like this gigantic thing all over the world. And, you know, dumbass girls who carry chihuahuas, you know, are like wearing these hats everywhere.
Right, and they don't... They have no idea. Dutch, a racist. Who would have thought with a name like Von Dutch...
It's like saying, go Hitler on your cap.
Yay,
you know?
Hitler. Hitler rules. Hitler's my homeboy.
He rocks.
Yeah. So, look, let's talk a little about, before I get into that last piece you did for Salon, I want to talk about, because I did say you spent time with Satan, and a lot of people don't realize that Satan used to live in San Francisco, and we had kind of a funny moment around that. You spent time with Anton LaVey, because you did some stuff for the old magazine with Anton LaVey.
We did a fashion shoot with Anton LaVey inside the Church of Satan headquarters. Yeah.
He's the president of the Church of Satan, but he was just an old carny, right?
He was a piano player at burlesque houses, and he worked at circuses. And, you know, a journalist, oddly enough, told him, hey, you know, all these little lectures you're doing in your house for free, you should start like a church, a nonprofit kind of organization around this.
Uh-huh.
So they did they basically whipped it up. They cribbed some texts from all these different sort of things and invented the Church of Satan. And they had a satanic wedding and a satanic funeral. And it hit news headlines all over the world. And then people convinced him to sort of write a book called The Satanic Bible, which apparently sells really well over Halloween every year.
Sure. It's
still,
a perfect Halloween
to
gift.
To this day, yeah. And, you know, then he was like Mr. Satan. He was, you know, hanging out with celebrities.
Sammy Davis.
Sammy Davis Jr.
Jane Mansfield.
Tina Louise. That was an interesting one.
Really? Ginger?
Church of Satan.
Ginger from Gilligan's Island?
Yeah.
She was actually, I think that show more than, I think Bob Denver was actually Satan.
There was a lot of satanic influence in that show, if you look closely.
Sure.
If you look closely.
All that weird, you know, the things they make out of things, some of the rituals they did.
So very satanic, all of it.
Jump in anytime, Jim. Don't be afraid.
No, I agree. He was Satan. Everybody was stuck on that damn island because of him. I mean, who else but Satan would do that?
Exactly my point. Or perhaps there's some people that interpret the Gilligan character as Jesus.
Well, Jesus is kind of like Satan.
Oh, here we go. We'll get to that later.
Dual personality thing going on here.
Oh, interesting.
You know, it's an interesting story. Now that you mention that, a friend of mine, a guy, well, I shouldn't say friend, a guy who I knew once, a guy named Carter Castera, an artist, okay, did a neon piece of art out of neon, okay? And what it was Satan's face and then Jesus' face. Like one would light up and it'd be Jesus, and then that would go out and a red Satan's face would come on. And it would just go back and forth like that. And you know who bought that piece?
Who?
The Vatican.
Really?
What the hell is that about? Apparently, the Vatican amasses artworks that have any religious connotations. I think it's sort of similar. Maybe they think it's some sort of witchcraft, but the Vatican bought it and I guess threw it in their basement.
Take it out of circulation.
I think that's probably right.
Sure.
Right.
Sure.
And then everyone
so else has to see it.
Yeah. Exactly. The Pope says, you want to see the real dirty stuff?
Let's go for the quick tour downstairs.
I'll show you the dirty stuff. Yeah. Grab on those altar boys. Let's go downstairs. So we're going to talk about J.T. LeRoy. We're going to talk about, James Frey a little bit. Just the new culture of, literary fraud. That is seemingly being accepted by some people. And the interesting thing about J.T. LeRoy is she has spun it with the help of some entertainment industry people into a business that, like, initially, we'll explain it in a minute. We're with Jack Boulware. It's about 19 past. Stay with us. The Mark Maron Show. Down of pain. Me damn sure the pilot washed his hands and sealed his face.
And now, back to a man who has improved his hair's appearance, Mark Maron.
Man, don't even start with me, Blondie, all right? I don't understand it. You tell me it's genetic, but I ain't buying it. Do you understand? Dye job, so lay off my do, okay?
It's real hair.
Yeah, whatever. All right, we're with Jack Boulware, the writer, chronicler of all things. Man, there's so many stories we could do, but let's talk about the one that was in Salon last month. It's up now, isn't it?
It's still on the website, yeah.
Now, I don't know the story of J.T. LeRoy. Now, this was a tremendous hoax because everybody, I bet you a lot of people in our audience knows who J.T. LeRoy was supposed to be. What is the story on that, Jack?
Well, it started because there was this woman who lived in San Francisco with her boyfriend, and she was a sex writer. She wrote reviews of porn websites, things like that. Couldn't get her fiction published. Decided to start writing from the point of view of a young teenage boy who worked as a cross-dressing prostitute at truck stops with his mother.
Mm.
You know, classic abused kid, heroin addict, lived on the streets for a while.
Sounds perfectly reasonable. Why would anybody not believe that?
And her backstory was so involved that, you know, she started slipping these short stories to people as this little kid, J.T. LeRoy.
Right.
I talked to one of the first guys who received it, and he was responsible for getting these manuscripts into the hands of famous writers and agents in New York. Suddenly this, like, fictional character, and nobody ever talked to him except on the telephone.
So the literate got excited a la, at, like, how Mailer got excited about that convict. Like, this is a diamond in the rough.
Exactly. The new It Boy. The new, you know, the abused literary star. Mm-hmm. It's going to be this up-and-coming kind of thing. And it was a whirlwind. I remember the book first came out, Sarah. Actually, she was writing stories for New York Press. He had a regular column there, and he would interview all these celebrities, always on the telephone. Nobody ever met him. And his book came out, and all of a sudden it was this whirlwind of Winona Ryder and Courtney Love and Carrie Fisher and all
these, to be part of it.
Billy Corgan, all these people suddenly claimed to be his friend, and they empathized with his story and the fact that he came from such a tough background and he was an abused child, and he'd somehow been able to internalize that and put it down on the page and articulate that experience for everyone. And it was sad and uplifting and redemptive, because the literary biz always loves a great redemptive story.
And when did it come crashing down on all these people that were taken for a ride emotionally?
People wondered throughout last year. I think there was a lot of rumors floating around. There was an article that was supposed to be written in the San Francisco Bay Guardian in October, and it was abruptly shelved and never published.
Like, there were people like, I went to that truck stop looking for some head, and I couldn't find him.
Though this writer, like, traced his name. He found out he had no Social Security number.
Yeah.
All the checks were going from – he's had three books published already.
Wow.
And they've been made into movies. One is screening around the country now. So there was money being generated out of this fictitious name, and the money was going to a Nevada limited partnership. And he ended up publishing the story in New York Magazine, and that's when it really hit the fan, late last year. And then the New York Times did a story in February where the woman's boyfriend basically had said, yeah, we've been doing it out of our apartment in San Francisco for the last 6 years.
That's hilarious. And it was just a hoax. And now what's funny is all these people that have movie deals have now said, well, let's do a movie about the hoax.
There because of my story in Salon, I wrote mostly about who this woman was. I talked to her, friends of hers in New York. She was a skinhead punk who lived on the Lower East Side. She was really into punk rock. She moved out to San Francisco and got a boyfriend, and they had a band. I bumped into them in the 90s a couple of different times. They'd send me their music and emails back and forth and all this. And after my story came out, this attorney from L.A. called me and was doing the big showbiz thing and said, yeah, there are three movies. It's kind of, you compared it to the Long Island Lolita story, where this event happened in nature in the real world,
yeah,
and everyone involved ran scurrying to get their own movie deal.
That's funny.
So there's three different ones competing. So if anyone's listening tonight and looking at the movie deal, there's two others floating around.
In a second, we'll talk about the difference between, you know, fraud and a hoax. But right now, Jim, are you pissed off about something? Can we spin the wheel of anger? And it's going to be fat babies.
Mm.
Fat babies.
All right, man.
So, you know, hang on to that. We're going to do that. Jack's going to stay with us till the end of the show. Maybe we'll get to the stuff I said we'll get to. Maybe not. We've got some things we need to talk about. Jack, Jim, grew up on a cattle farm.
Oh,
maybe you guys
that.
Have something to talk about. So stay with us. Lots coming. A lot that we can do in that half hour. Yeah, 29 past.
God, I've gone through this crap faster than I ever have before in my entire life.
And now he's got a suspicious package. Mark Maron.
I did. I got two yesterday. And I got this one here.
Oh, man.
Hey.
I love that.
You started it. I am aspartame free. How do you like that? Going on like 4 days. And you know what? I can remember being born. It's all coming back because of the no aspartame. Well, we spun the wheel of anger. Jim, Jack Buller is going to hang out. We're going to talk to him. I'm probably not going to get to anything I set up at the beginning of the show. So from here on out, Bill Kollar, people are wondering how they spell your name. K-O-L-L-A-R. Bill Kollar. Sweepy Bill Cohort is Chris from Kansas for the time being, my friends. We're going to miss you, buddy. It's going to be sad. But look, we spun the wheel. Jack's hanging out. I guess what I'm saying is I'm not going to get to a lot of stuff I said I was.
Oh, until, you know, there's tomorrow, until, next week.
Till tomorrow, next week. Thurston Moore tomorrow from Sonic Youth.
Oh, man.
I wonder if he's going to come on and make noise. Jim, do the wheel of anger. Enough of that.
Fat babies, Mark. Fat babies.
Got it.
This week, there are a lot of things that really burned me up, like Tom DeLay's cowardly exit from an embarrassing election, Eminem divorcing his wife again, and doctors reattaching a piece of Ariel Sharon's skull. But today, I want to talk about something even more irritating than that. Fat babies. Big, fat, selfish, dumb, fat babies.
For they are tomorrow's Karl Roves, Mark.
Mm.
Tomorrow's Dick Cheney's, and yes, tomorrow's Wilford Brimley's. Sluggish hogs feeding off the world's limited resources. Great pulsating pupas of poop soiling our water and air with each contemptuous smirk of their ketchup-stained mouths. Mark.
Yeah.
This week, the Columbus Children's Research Institute at Columbus Children's Hospital, or CRICH, revealed that American babies are so horrendously bloated, so shamefully gargantuan, so damn fat, that there's a shortage of car seats that can fit them.
Oh.
Yeah. Oh, Jesus.
No kidding.
In fact, companies have been forced to redesign child car seats so they're bigger and stronger just to accommodate this country's fascination with corn syrup, red meat, and ritual self-hatred. It's a fat baby epidemic. And how do we Americans address this problem? By going to the root of the problem? By feeding babies less? No, no. By making child car seats bigger, Mark. Toenail fungus? Don't wash your stupid feet. Just take a pill that wrecks your liver. High blood pressure? Don't cut down on corn dogs and Pepsi. Just take another pill that wrecks your liver and gives you anal leakage. Wrecked liver? Just take a pill that gives you toenail fungus and high blood pressure. Okay, that last one I made up. Regardless, it's the typical American solution of treating the symptom and not the cause. That's why infants will continue to get fat. In fact, people are having to rip apart their Victorian homes just so they can get some old-growth redwood planks big enough to swallow these sad little monsters. As if we didn't know that already. In my neighborhood alone, Mark, it now takes at least two calico cats to smother the average baby in their sleep as opposed to the usual one Siamese.
Oh, that's horrible.
Yeah. Oh, man, it's even worse. Now I know what you're asking, Mark. What's the answer?
What's the answer, Jim?
Good question, Mark. I'm glad you asked. Well, I can solve this problem with just two words. Baby food. No, I'm not talking about limiting baby food. I'm talking about making food out of babies.
Oh,
baby food.
Yeah.
It's much better than eating baby calves, environmentally friendly and economical. The only other solution I see is simple old-fashioned weight loss. That's right. Harvest their organs. Why, a fat baby kidney probably weighs around 7 pounds alone. That's right. I'm advocating harvesting human babies for food and organs. Care of Air America Radio and Danny Goldberg. It worked for our founding fathers. Otherwise, we'll have to force parents and their families to read food labels and eat sensibly. And we all know that's impossible. So the next time Baby Huey rips through his 5-point restraint system like a 40-pound missile and crashes through the windshield of your Chevy Blazer, just think of it as the Lord's way of telling you to eat more sliced veal. You've just taken another ride on Jim's wheel of anger. I'm Jim Earle. And you've been Earled.
Hey, fat baby.
Mommy, can I have some more food, please? I want some more food.
His fat baby's not Fat Albert.
Hey.
Come on, but that is a known cultural quantity, the Fat Albert voice, and I didn't know I was doing that until it came out of my mouth.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. I'm
sorry. Come on, man. Hey, Jack Bauer is still here, and we're going to talk. Speaking of frauds. This is going to tie up a lot of loose ends here. I don't think we're going to get to insurance or Oliver Stone or even 507s or, you know, whatever they're called.
507s?
The 527s.
527?
Yeah, 527. Here's a guy that did a study that says that he thinks that Jesus didn't walk on the water. This is a scientist says he might be floating on a piece of ice. Jesus was just surfing on a piece of ice. I'm not making it up. There's science. So Jesus was hoaxing. He hoaxed the people. He did a magic trick. It's probably far away, and they're like, who's that guy out there? Oh, my God, he's walking on water. But there's a possibility he was on a piece of ice. Apparently, a study found an unusual combination of water and atmospheric conditions in what is now northern Israel could have led to ice formation on the Sea of Galilee, my friends. And this guy, Professor Doran Knopf, he's the same guy that also said the Red Sea was explainable by science. This is right up your alley.
Yeah, okay.
He's all right. He says that they used records of the Mediterranean Sea's surface temperature and statistical models to examine the dynamics of the Sea of Galilee. And apparently during this period of cooler temperatures between 1500 and 2600 years ago could have been the time when Jesus lived. So they're basically saying that a drop in temperature below freezing could have caused ice thick enough to support a human being. So Jesus could have been just like, he might not have been even trying to prove anything. He might have just been like, dude, look, I'm doing this. I'm on the ice. Just on the ice.
That explains a lot.
I know. And apparently he's gotten some hate mail. And some people have asked this guy to explain the resurrection. Isn't that funny how snotty they are? Like, fine, all right, so maybe he was on ice. But how did he come back to life, Smarty?
Coma.
Huh? Coma. Why not? Exactly. Yeah.
It's like that last scientist last year who explained Jesus' unsightly hump. His pet mongoose.
Oh, yeah. You know,
pet mongoose, he always carried a pet mongoose on his back.
I've heard about the unsightly hump. That's a recurring theme in some of... when we do the gym anthology, when there's actually courses taught on Jim Earl, and we play this clip.
Dear terrorists, to have the expertise to break down the chemical composition of anthrax, you probably also know how to manufacture hallucinogens in your own kitchen, or perhaps even basement playroom. We should talk. Is there chocolate where you are?
See, now that clip will be
what the hell was that?
We'll be in a classroom.
Thanks for taking something completely out of context and not even setting it up properly.
That was Bill. That was Kolar. Don't blame me for that one. Bill was on the board with that one. But no, picture it, Jim. People will be like, it's so hard to really assess the complete work of Jim Earl. Like this fragment that has no explanation because we lost all the other records. But there was a genius to it that goes unrecognized. And they discuss it along with the frequent reference to rodents and humps on backs and lint-covered mints. Jack Bowler still
old
here.
People
go ahead.
Like lint-covered mints.
They do. Jack, so let's do this. The difference between fraud and a hoax is the nature of it. Like James Fry... That's not a hoax. That guy's just a lying sack of poop.
That's exaggeration to me.
Exaggeration? He lied.
Yeah.
And exactly. A lot of people are like, but it was a good story, so doesn't everybody lie a little bit? Yeah, but that was the one part of his entire book that gave the guy any credibility or integrity whatsoever to move through the rest of the book with any respect.
I agree. To me, a hoax is something that is completely fabricated.
Yeah.
From start to finish. Maybe even a fictional person is responsible for it. But Fry was, you know, it was his own name on the book. You know, he was writing about his life and then just, you know, made up a whole bunch of stuff. Because I think it's partly due to our culture that in which we live, where people are saying, look, if there's not a beheading, I'm not interested. You know, everything has to pop. You know, if it's a book, they're chopping trees. They have to, you know, it really has to have a lot of sizzle. I mean, Amber Fry had a book. What did she do? Is she a writer? No.
Who is she?
She like fell in love with Scott Peterson and, you know, but the fact she has a hardcover book, a memoir ghostwritten by God knows who, but there Amber Fry is having a book on the bestseller list.
I think also what it is just demand, and people think they can get away with more. There's so much information, so much of it is crap, and there's just a constant need for it to feed this information mill.
Exactly.
That people are like, what the hell, man? I'm tapped out. Why not make it up?
No, exactly. And that's why, you know, there's so much media around where you're watching TV shows and you're like, I have never heard of that show, never heard of that actress, never heard of that person. I have no idea who these people are, but they're just generated solely to be guests on shows. Well, I'm real, but
you are.
Literary hoaxes are really odd because they trace back as far as cavemen have been scratching on walls.
Yeah.
I mean, as soon as someone figured out some sort of pictographic language, you know there's a caveman off to the side going, they're not going to believe this.
Yeah,
maybe they
yeah.
will. I don't know.
Yeah, they're bisons.
Yeah, I killed all of the bison myself with my finger. So, you know, they did trace back that far. And I think now it's escalating because people want to be famous. They want to be... They want to be recognized for things, and there's a lot of frustration. The book business is, you know, it's a 19th century medium. People aren't as excited about it anymore, but it has some sort of a degree of nobility, so people want to be a part of it, and they can't. They can't break in because Amber Fry has all the book deals. So they lie. They create something that they know will be juicy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and that's happened really throughout history, but I think it's happening more. That's why we're seeing all of this stuff. I know James Fry you know made all this up, but I have to believe that some part of it was suggested.
Yeah,
to him.
I just sold my war memoir.
You were in the war.
Sure,
that's right.
Sure, I was in three of them.
That's right.
Yeah.
Which one was best?
But they all have their own qualities.
You were in the Burger Wars.
I was. I was. I was. I was
Pepsi
also.
War.
I was in the Cola Wars. Yeah. But so, Jack, you're doing a big event up in San Francisco. That's coming up where you're actually going to have people reading from famous literary hoaxes.
I did a bunch of research about literary hoaxes throughout history.
Right.
There's some classics. I mean, the autobiography of Howard Hughes by Clifford Irving.
I saw a movie on that with Orson Welles did called F for Fake.
That's
I remember
right.
seeing it when I was a kid.
That's right. And Clifford Irving found a book about Howard Hughes that wasn't going to be published and just lied and said it was an autobiography and rewrote a bunch more material. Got a big book deal, over $1 million. It was never published, but we all know about it.
Right.
I mean, that's how big it was at the time. There's classic ones like the there's a book called The Education of Little Tree, which was something that came out about 15 years ago, and it was a little story. It was a memoir of a small Cherokee boy who was raised by his grandparents, and they taught him the Cherokee way of looking at nature and learning from the world. And it was very popular for children to read.
Mm-hmm.
Their parents would read this to them. It was exposed as the author was not Cherokee at all. He was a white supremacist who founded a chapter of the Ku Klux Klan and wrote George Wallace's famous speech about segregation forever.
That's wild.
And he changed his name and thought, well, okay, I'm not going to, I'm going to get out of the political game. And he just made up this whole cloth, this Cherokee little boy, his story. And he also wrote a book, The Outlaw Josie Wales, which Clint Eastwood bought and made into a movie.
And that guy was a repentant white supremacist?
Yeah, until the day he died. He actually was killed because he was in a drunken fight with his own son.
Oh,
he had a classic.
Right.
Where's his TV movie?
Yeah, well,
I mean, they're making
it
all about J.T. Leroy. Where's his movie?
Write it. So Litquake, what's the website so we can get people going here?
Oh, this is litquake.org. This event is taking place in San Francisco April 22nd. We're going to be reading a bunch of different literary hoaxes, and we're also doing a slideshow, The Lonely Planet Guide to a Rock.
And what's your website?
JackBulware.com.
Thanks for being here, Jack.
Thanks.
You don't have to leave necessarily, but I feel like there's a couple of loose ends we got to tie up. I didn't get to the emails, Jim, that you've spurned on with your basically saying that Jesus was a hoax.
That's all right. We can get to it tomorrow and next week.
I know.
Jesus,
and I got the
believers
insurance
are going to be around for a while.
And look, that was a conversation. Like Oliver Stern has been basically blasting media groups, saying that that they're slandering celebrities for having political views. I can't stand people that do that. Of course, celebrities can have political views. I'll tell the story that I had, that moment I had with Mitch Fatel, who decided it was very weird. Because I think just because celebrities have a pulpit, have a place to talk, and if they have political views, they should share them. They inspire people. But it was an interesting conversation. We'll get into that in a second. It's 49 past. Thanks, Jack Bulware.
If you really believe Mark Maron is the one and true Christ, you won't want to miss his Short Order News coming up next. Amen.
Now he's more accurate than Wikipedia, Mark Maron.
Hey, people. Here you go. I got something for you. Tomorrow night, a friend of ours is giving a benefit for his friend, the I Care for Erica comedy benefit. This woman needs surgery. She needs an emergency vitrectomy. This is not joking. Patton Oswalt, Bob Odenkirk, Louis C.K., Dana Gould, Naked Trucker, and Andy Kindler. Man, that's a hell of a lineup. Hosted by Jimmy Pardo. It's tomorrow night, April 6th at 8 p.m. at the Steve Allen Theater. I'm trying to figure out, I guess I can put the link up on the site, but the Steve Allen Theater, that's where it's at.
Very good cause. It's a typical story of somebody who doesn't have health care and may risk going blind because of it.
It's horrible, and we're going to talk about that tomorrow. Let's save all the stuff that we had for tomorrow, because we got a full show tomorrow. Got Thurston Moore is going to be here. Patton Oswalt can do the benefit, but he can't do our show. I understand. It's more important. He'll be back. No problem. Thurston Moore is going to be here. Lawton Smalls on the phone tomorrow night. We're going to have a guy named Wayne Slatter from the Dallas Morning News to talk some dirt about DeLay, Tom DeLay, the now ex. He's done. He's going to jail. And the guy who's running in his place, I kind of blew past something yesterday. This guy who's going to run for DeLay's seat is this guy, the Sugarland Mayor, David G. Wallace. David G. Wallace is in business with Bob Perry's son. Bob Perry is a real estate magnate of sorts, who put $8 million of his own money into the SWIFPO Veterans for Truth ad. This guy is a right-wing propagandist pedigree, you know, fascist bastard, this dude, David Wallace. And he's got the big smiling mug of a high school wrestler who wants to be president. Let's take him down. Let's help Lampson take him down there. I got to do the jokes now. Thank you, Jack Boulware, again for hanging out.
Thanks.
Nice to see
you. Thank you.
A lot happened in the world today, and we want to make sure you caught up on current events before you go to bed. So here's tonight's edition of Mark Maron Short Order News. I'll tell the story about the comedian, too. Man, I teased a bunch of stuff. It's a deep tease.
You're just loaded with good stuff.
Tomorrow, deep tease. A deputy press secretary for the Department of Homeland Security is in a Maryland jail today awaiting extradition to Florida on child pornography charges. Police say it's the first time a pedophile has been caught after wiretapping himself. New medical data shows American children and adult men are getting fatter while women are remaining steady. Some researchers feel the nation's obesity epidemic may be peaking. Although skeptics say that's ridiculous, there's still a lot more food left. A man in Britain was hauled off a plane by London police on terrorism fears after he played songs by The Clash and Led Zeppelin in a taxi. The would-be passenger later remarked, quote, "Not only did I miss my plane, I didn't even get to play my favorite group, Mohammed and the Boxcutters." End quote. And that's the Mark Maron Short Order News for tonight. I will tell all those stories tomorrow. Basically, it's just some guy. Some guy was telling me that Sean Penn's got no credibility to talk about politics. And I'm like, what about Rush Limbaugh? And he's like, yeah, Rush Limbaugh, that's his job. He's a politician. I'm like, no, he's not. No, he's not. He's an entertainer.
Nobody has credibility.
That's right. Those pundits are just in it for the money, and they're being paid by the Republican Party and by the people that listen to him for listening to him. It's ridiculous. This idea that those guys have integrity, they're clowns.
They don't talk about fat babies.
They were spinning, you know, top 40 records 20 years ago. Hey, so that's it. Thurston Moore tomorrow. Wayne Swader from the Dallas Morning News about delay tomorrow. Lawton Smalls tomorrow. We'll put a link up to that benefit in just a second. You've been great. I've been Durst. Good night, sheeple.
Oh, Danny boy, the pie.